to live righteously.
Time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 201. In the second and third block, we visit with Mitch Davis, who has a film coming out called Christmas Eve. It's got Patrick Stewart in it,
what?
John Heder, a bunch of other cool, awesome people. He's the guy who directed Other Side of Heaven.
Oh, right.
The Other Side of Heaven, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
Kolipoki.
What?
Kolipoki?
Yeah.
Elder Kolipoki.
So we visit with him in the second and third block. He talks about how he gets such an amazing cast and what he's been up to and all that cool stuff. It's a great Christmas movie. Put it on your calendar. Comes out the first Friday in December. You're hearing it here first on the Cultural Hall because we're better than anybody else. Yep. Anyone else. E-L-T-S-E. Else. A couple of emails before we get into today's episode. We mentioned the email the other day from old Paul. Paul White says, thank you for answering my question about the SSA. No, not soprano, soprano, alto. I asked one of my priest friends about it as well. Yes, Kyle, I listen to the Cultural Hall. I am a cradle Catholic, and my guess is that I'm older than any member of you all in the hall, which is true. He's older than Kyle.
Hmm.
His personal view hit upon being some of what y'all said, but focused more on his perspective that a person's identity slash essence can be reduced to sexual desire direction. And yes, Molly, once we meet, and if you give me permission, then I may use your other name or the combined one.
I met him.
What's that?
I met him Wednesday night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay. He says, I was the person who wrote ex animo in a previous note. I do not speak or read Latin, but it's fun to toss that out from time to time. Dominus vobiscum, writes Paul. And then this, also from Paul, and I had this, but I, for whatever reason, didn't share it on Monday's Articles of News. He says, hey, just quick note to let you guys know that you're all in my thoughts and prayers. I'm guessing that we have different viewpoints and perspectives on the policy discussion going on with the LDS Church and with same-sex marriage and children. I imagine it's not an easy time for y'all right now, given that people may pepper you with questions and or take out frustrations or assume your various positions at this time. I can empathize due to when things flare up with ethnicity, prejudice issues, or Catholic issues. I seem to get more traffic from folks not just wanting to know more information, but seeming to want specific data that fits their viewpoint. Try to remember that people are hurting and or confused and or angry on all sides. So reaching out, lashing out can be a response. And while humor can help to diffuse in some circumstances, it can also flame and be interpreted as callous and flippant. With that said, peace, my friend, Paul. And then finally, this email. Ron Johnston. My name is Ron Johnston. I come from Wisconsin. You know that song?
I don't.
I think it's actually John Johnson.
Oh.
And I don't know the next verse.
Okay.
What's
it from?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's one of those songs that you sing as a kid.
Oh, not a nursery rhyme.
Yeah,
but
it's like, hey, shut up and sing a song, kid.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in the car and we're driving so far, so let's sing this one.
Right, like, do you remember the singing yo, hee ho, sail across the ocean blue, singing yo, from the old Today's Special with the mannequin?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was the alarm that went off when Sam, the sailor puppet guy,
uh-huh,
when his office alarm would go off, that was the song. And for whatever reason, stuck. Right here.
Right there. Good.
So back to Ron Johnston.
Sure.
He is the guy who runs famousmormons.net.
Yes.
He says, hey, I listened to the Cultural Hall about the big change. You guys did a great job. I'm pretty upset, writes John, about the handbook change. And I know many other members who also think that this did not come from the Lord, but from elderly men in Salt Lake. However, I just stumbled across this hilarious video. And I decided not to share this video because, mm-hmm, I didn't find it necessarily that hilarious. But you can Google search it if you'd like to search it. So I guess it's worth at least a mention. Disney songs for alienated Mormon kids.
Ruh-roh.
And the reason why I didn't share it, Ron, it was not because I don't appreciate that sort of humor. For it to be a parody song and for me to feel like sharing it, it has to be really well done.
Yeah.
Like, lots of people, you know, like your ward, your young men's did a parody song of You Don't Know You're Beautiful. And it's like, No, I'm not going to share that. Because it's not, if it's well done.
Right.
If old, what's his name? What's his
name? Keith Allen.
Keith Allen.
He's really clever and thoughtful in how he does his parodies. That's why he's so successful.
He's the one who did the Harry Potter one to
Dark Lord Funk.
And then the other one was the Talk Nerdy to Me.
Yeah.
That's his deal.
K-Face TV, I believe, is his handle and his YouTube channel.
So he's really good. Former guest here on the Cultural Hall. He's really good.
Yes, he is.
I don't typically share. I mean, this one's better than most, but it not that great. Anyway, Disney Songs for Alienated Mormon Kids. So you can check that out. And as always, you can find our ad at famousmormons.net. Thanks, John, Ron Johnston, not John Ronston.
Nope.
John Ronston's a whole different guy.
Yeah, I know. And you did say John earlier, but yeah, it's Ron. It's cool.
No, I said John Johnson was the song.
Right, but then as... That's fine.
Are you giving me credit? Giving me justification? Am I okay?
Uh-huh.
Perfect. I guess let's get started then. You can always send us emails. It's contact@theculturalhall.com now. New email address, contact@theculturalhall.com. You can reach out to us on our website. Go to theculturalhall.com. There's a contact us tab. You can find us on Facebook. There's a message thing there. You knew that. We do the Google Plus for one of you. We got the Twitter as well, which, speaking of, new things coming up for the Twitter. Hold tight to the Twitter rod, at the Cultural Hall. We might be doing, what are those things called? Not a talkback. Is it a talkback?
Twitter chat.
Twitter chat. Mm-hmm. Twit chat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We might be doing one of those things.
Awesome.
Soon. Probably not next week because it's Thanksgiving.
Right.
But soon.
Did you mention Instagram?
And then the Instagram at the Cultural Hall as well. The website's great. Share us that way as well. Is there something I'm missing?
Facebook?
Yeah, the Facebook said that. All right. We'll get into the second and third block. It's Mitch Davis, The Other Side of Heaven. Or is it The Other Side?
The Other Side of.
Of. Heaven?
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and here with me, I'm pretty honored, it's Mitch Davis. Now, you hear that name and you think, oh, well, there was a brother Mitch Davis in my ward. It could be him, but this Mitch Davis is the director of the movie that you've probably seen, The Other Side of Heaven, and he has a new project coming out called The Christmas Eve Movie. And I'm saying it wrong because it's just Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah, you just gave us the name of the website.
Yeah.
But the ChristmasEveMovie.com is the website. The movie is just called Christmas Eve.
Immediately, I think there's got to be 100 movies named Christmas Eve. Aren't there already?
We were totally shocked when we did the title search. There are no claims on this title. It's never really. I mean, there are a bunch of older movies that have been made, but there's nothing currently in competition with us. So it's completely free and clear.
So take it up. It's yours. The Other Side of Heaven. I want to get to know you a little bit, and then I want to talk about that movie because that to me is a distinctively different Mormon movie. So let's get to know Mitch. You went to BYU, that much I know.
Yeah.
How did you get there?
You know, I went there because at that time they were accepting just about anyone. I could never get into BYU today, but I went and had a fabulous experience. I was an English major. I thought I wanted to be a writer, and took some film appreciation courses while there. Got the bug a little bit, but I ended up graduating in English Lit with an emphasis in creative writing and decided I wanted to become a writer for movies because I heard they got paid well. And then I found out that when you write movies, you have no control over what people do with your script because you hand it to a director or a producer or a studio and they can do whatever they want to it. So then I decided, well, I can't just be a writer. I got to be a director. And then I found out nobody would hire me. And so I said, well, I guess I got to be a producer so I can hire myself to direct a movie that I've written. And that's kind of the way my career evolved. I mean, I spent time working at the studios. I worked at Disney for a couple of years and at Columbia Studios. So I had those opportunities, but my real interest is in the creative side. I love to write movies. I love to direct, and I love everything about making movies except, you know, all the business stuff. That's easily tired of.
That's what most creative people, I think, that is the downfall of most creative people. You find, I shouldn't say downfall, but you find a creative person and they're successful if they found someone that will take care of all the other stuff that they can't focus on.
And that's a little bit of a cliche, but it's very much true also. And that's one of the things I'm so passionate about. That's why I'm so passionate about the movie industry. Without question, the theatrically released feature film is the gold standard of the standard bearer of popular culture. Everything trickles downhill from that. And it's also the most expensive cultural event. Mm-hmm. And because movies are so expensive to make, the gatekeepers to what movies get made are the bankers.
Yeah.
And bankers want a return on their investment, and I don't blame them. But then that's why you end up with so many movies with excessive amounts of sex and violence in them, because sex and violence on the screen improves your ROI. And so that's why I get passionate about movies and about independent movies in particular. I just think Frank Capra said one time, he said, only the morally courageous should be allowed to speak to their fellow men for 2 hours in the dark. And I love it. But the fact of the matter in the world today is that it's not the morally courageous who are speaking for 2 hours to their fellow men in the dark. It's the bankers, mm-hmm, who figured out how to get an ROI out of movies by putting extra sex and violence in them, in the same way that the tobacco companies figured out if they spiked cigarettes with extra nicotine, they got a better ROI. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I want to back up a little bit, though. Where were you raised, here in the state of Utah?
No, I was born and raised in California.
Okay, Southern California.
Southern California.
I get that vibe a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I it's the puka shells.
Yeah.
It's the puka shells.
It's the necklace, sure.
And the flip-flops.
Yes.
Raised in Southern California. Came here to go to school at BYU and then went back to California. Went to Colorado for a while. And I'm living in Utah now, living the dream.
Family, lifetime members of the church?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Where did the family come to the church? How far back was that?
On my mom's side, I'm from the Archibald Gardner clan. Okay. of Gardner Village fame.
So for people who don't know that, that's good hardy pioneer stock right there.
He was one of Brigham Young's bishops in the West Valley for years. He was a miller. He built mills all up and down the Wasatch Front. So I definitely go back on back decades and centuries there. And on my dad's side, both of my grandfathers were not LDS. Both of my grandmothers were.
Okay.
On my dad's side, his mother was a Conrad/Eccles. Okay. And she grew up in the South Fork of the Provo Canyon. And I was just out there yesterday shooting a video, actually. Mm-hmm. Drove past her old little homestead. It's still there. Beautiful little ponds. It's a reception center. People do weddings there now.
Oh, great. I have to ask, because maybe it's important to know, what was the video you were shooting yesterday?
We were shooting a music video with Jenny Oakes Baker, who is in our movie. She has a small role in the film, and she plays a violin solo that is actually quite riveting, a very haunting, powerful version of Silent Night. and we're doing a music video of her rendition of Silent Night, intercutting it with footage from the film featuring Patrick Stewart. And we shot Jenny yesterday in and around South Fork.
Geez, so already we're talking a couple of big names that people will recognize, both in Jenny Oakes Baker and Patrick Stewart, for crying out loud.
Yeah, no, we really hit the jackpot with this movie from a cast standpoint. We've got Patrick Stewart in it. We have John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite. We have James Rodet from TV's Psych. We have Cheryl Hines from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Gary Cole from Veep and Talladega Nights and Office Space. He's an eclectic guy. We have Jenny Oakes Baker. We have Sean King. Sean and Larry King produced the movie. We got a lot, sort of an embarrassment of riches, and I've had a lot of great casts in my last three movies in particular, but this one is by far the broadest based and the most fun.
How did you get all those people?
You get great people in your movie if you have a great script and if you have the budget to pay for great people. I've been really fortunate. My last three movies, I've had two Academy Award winning actors and then Patrick Stewart. Anne Hathaway in Other Side of Heaven. I had F. Murray Abraham in Language of the Enemy, and now Patrick, who feels like an Academy Award winner even if he doesn't have an Oscar. He just carries himself like one.
I guess that surprises me that he doesn't, but you're right. In thinking about it, what would he have an Academy Award in?
I think he's got his eyes on the prize. I think before his career is done, he'll have one. But that's definitely, I think, he's headed in that direction.
Awesome.
But you get the great actors if you can afford to pay them, and if you have a script that they're interested in. And I say that with some humility on this project in particular, because it's the best script I've ever had to work with, and I didn't write it. Mm-hmm. I didn't write all of it. I actually purchased a script that was written by a guy named Tyler McKellar, a first-time writer out of Driggs, Idaho.
Wow, small town.
No, actually smaller. He's from Tetonia. Outside of Driggs. So they go into Driggs when they want to go to the big town.
So for people listening to this, just to give you an idea, so if you're saying it's a town outside of Driggs, I want people to close their eyes as they're listening to this, unless you're driving, of course, and I want you to imagine nothing and then imagine outside of nothing. That's what Tetonia would be.
That's right, that's right.
No offense, Tetonians.
That's right. Yeah.
Or Tetonian, I guess, would be more accurate with that town.
Yeah, so I purchased a script that had been written by Tyler McKellar. We rewrote it together several times, and then I made, I don't know, five or six more passes on my own. So it's a shared writing credit. And it's one of those scripts that when I read it, I remember putting it down and just going, wow. Mm. And that's a response really everybody else had to the material as well. The script was originally called Stuck. It was originally not a Christmas movie. It was just about six groups of New Yorkers stuck in elevators. And in one of my last revisions of the script, I made it Christmas Eve, set it on Christmas Eve, just because I thought that would kind of heighten the stakes a little bit. But you gotta have budget to pay a cast, and you gotta have a screenplay that when they read it, they think, I want to be part of this. I won't be embarrassed to be in this. I won't be embarrassed to say those lines.
I want to get back to you a little bit more, kind of upbringing and what inspires a person to do all that you've done. But hearing about the film a little bit, where it's Christmas Eve, it sort of reminds me of like those films, New Year's Eve, and I think it's Valentine's. Is it Valentine's Day?
Valentine's Day, yeah.
Where it's essentially, at least from what it sounds like, is kind of similar to your story in that it's different groups and individuals' stories. So was there a little bit of a nod to it with that, or just coincidental to up the stakes?
No, I think that Love Actually, Valentine's Day, New Year's Eve definitely have kind of created this genre of intertwining stories. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a nod to that. And there's more of a nod to that now that the movie's title is Christmas Eve and not just Stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a story about how we're all connected. I mean, even though these six different groups of people operate in six separate boxes and their actual lives only don't really intersect, you figure out through the course of the movie that they're all connected. And that's kind of a metaphor for how we are all connected and how... we can all, you know, we may live our lives in separate little compartments, but we're all part of one big Christmas family.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Let's go back to you a little bit. So Southern California, being a Southern California Mormon, it's different than being a Utah Mormon or anywhere else.
Yeah, it's better. Much better. Yeah. No, I just lost my audience.
Yeah, there it is, everyone. No, I think that there are definitely some advantages to being a Southern California Mormon as opposed to being a Utah Mormon, just as there are anywhere else. I think that there are distinct advantages and disadvantages that have being a Latter-day Saint here in the Wasatch Front. Mm-hmm. I would imagine Southern California. When are we talking? If you're 18 years old, what year are we talking?
I was in 18. Let's see. I was 18 in 76.
Okay, so we're talking the 70s.
Yeah.
A mission? Did you serve a mission?
Yeah, I served my mission in Argentina, the Cordoba mission. I was there.
They have a temple now, right?
They have a temple right where our mission home was. They,
wow.
They tore down our mission home and built the temple on top of it, yeah.
So that...
It was a mission that Richard G. Scott had been the mission president about 8 years before I was there.
Oh.
And it was a fabulous, fabulous experience being there.
And that's Spanish-speaking?
Yeah, Spanish-speaking.
Hard? Was that difficult?
You know... missions are always hard and they're always wondrous and bitter and sweet. But my mission was probably, I think it was the first thing I was ever really successful at. I was kind of a goofball in high school.
No.
No, I was a goofball, and
stop it.
It's funny. I got the faculty scholarship when I graduated high school, and when they stood up to give me the faculty scholarship, it was $100. I wasn't even planning on going to college. I didn't really have a plan for my life, and the guy who was giving me the award couldn't figure out why they were giving it to me. They said, "Well, we're just giving this to Mitch because it was not my GPA. We're giving this to Mitch because, he's just a really nice guy." and that was it. The mission was transformative for me. It was just really a powerful experience, and probably in the mission, I actually sort of had a spiritual experience on my mission.
That I would hope. Oh, you mean now you're going to allude to a specific?
I'll tell you. I guess this is an audience. This is an audience that could stomach this because it really is quite a personal experience. But you know, I went on my mission thinking when I left on my mission, my goal in life was to be the sports writer for the local newspaper in the city of Escondido, California. My goal was to be to cover high school football and basketball games and baseball games. That was it. And then when I went on my mission, you know, Heavenly Father gets a hold of you and he starts to kind of tell you who you are and what you are and what you can be or what you ought to be. And truthfully, I was walking down a road in Cordoba, Argentina one afternoon with my companion, Elder Creston Anderson. And the Spirit whispered to me from out of nowhere, someday you will make a movie about what it means to be a Mormon missionary. Boom. And that was the first time that I ever considered being involved in the movie industry. And it was a very specific prompting, and it was, you know, fulfilled 26 years later, whatever, when we made The Other Side of Heaven. That was the culmination of a quest that began from a prompting on my mission. Had I not gone on a mission, I wouldn't have had that prompting. I couldn't have, because I wouldn't have known what it was like to be a Mormon missionary. But there's something just so heroic and beautiful and pure about the Mormon missionary experience. It sort of feels like Chariots of Fire out there. You just go out there to do good, mm-hmm. and boy, it's hard, and it's frightening, and sometimes it's dangerous, but it's almost always altruistic, and boy, that's something our world can never get too much of.
Yeah. Because of the year and the timing, it's interesting to note that that was before the expansion of the priesthood.
Yes. Yes, that actually happened while I was on my mission.
So talk about that.
You know, Argentina is a country that does not have a lot of African, African-Americans, a lot of blacks. So it didn't affect us as much as other countries like Brazil. Mm-hmm. But I remember when that happened, just being overjoyed and just celebrating with, I was in an apartment with five other missionaries at the time, and we just all celebrated together and were overjoyed. And it was, we had one missionary from the Deep South in our apartment, mm-hmm. and he celebrated too, but he was scratching his head. You know, it was a big change for a lot of people. What a joyful thing! Mm. What a blessing for all of us.
When we get back, we're going to take a break for a second. When we come back, I want to talk about the experience with the other side of heaven. And with Elder Groberg, as I understand, you guys worked pretty closely together on that film. I'd love to hear some of the tales from the set and some of that. And then we'll continue to talk about Christmas Eve. People can go and check out thechristmasevemovie.com to find more about that. We'll tell you when it's coming out in theaters, so people can check that out. It will be a selected cities release, but it's national, so not just your Wasatch Front, pal.
No. It's nationwide, and it's statewide in Utah. We have wide coverage. Larry Miller Megaplex Theaters, every one of them from St. George to Logan is going to have the movie playing. So
we'll tell you more about that in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. A computer can be the best holiday gift imaginable. It can bring such joy and fluffiness. Buying any other brand of computer than a PC Laptops computer can be painful. Can you imagine calling Chumbawamba and being placed on hold for forever? Finally, when someone in Chumbawamba answers, only to be told your on-site extended warranty is the delivery guy picking up your computer and then having to wait 8 weeks for them to tell you that your software problem isn't covered by the warranty? You end up paying a huge bill, and on top of it, you get your computer back and all your data is erased. That's brain damage. Avoid the pain and feel the love this holiday season. For a limited time, get 0% APR for 24 months with a minimum purchase of $7.99. Call us at 1-877-596-7283 for details or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we love you.
Regular APR is 27.99% for newly opened accounts. APR may vary, subject to credit approval.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, sitting down with Mitch Davis, film director, English lit major, return missionary, and all-around goofball. Oh, wait, what is it that they said? He's a good guy.
Yeah, there we go. That's why I got the scholarship.
Because he's a...
Goofball would have been just as appropriate, however. Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about the other side of heaven. Elder Groberg has since passed away.
No, he's not.
He's not passed
away. He's still living.
Now, for some reason, why did I think that he had passed away? Did his wife pass away?
No, they're both still living. He was emeritus, and after he was emeritus, he served as a temple president for some time.
I don't know why I thought he had passed away.
No.
Sorry, Elder Groberg, as you're listening to this, I know you're very alive.
No, he is, and he's actually still, he and his wife, they've put me on their family letter list, so my wife and I get their monthly family letter, which is basically just a recitation of every place that John and Jean have gone together to speak at youth conferences or state conferences or firesides. Those people, in their retirement, they're busier than most members of the church are when they're not retired.
Yeah, ever.
Yeah.
Other Side of Heaven. How did that come about that you did that film? That wasn't your first film.
That was my second movie. It was the first movie that I kind of went soup to nuts from start to finish on. I told you that I had that spiritual experience about needing to do a movie about the Mormon missionary experience. And in about 1999, I had been serving as a bishop and I was getting released, and I knew the release was coming. And I had taken, I had actually dropped out of the movie business for 5 years while serving as bishop. I just, being a filmmaker, is very hectic and it's hard to do both of those things well. And so I took a break and just took a regular job for 5 years.
Wow.
As the release was coming up, I had a conversation with my wife. It was like, well, our life's pretty good. Got a good job. I'm going to be released as bishop. We've never done that movie thing that we talked about. What do you think? And I remember her just saying, honey, if you don't go for it now, you never will. I think we should do what we have to make that movie happen. And that movie at that time was only the general thought that I would make a movie about what it meant to be a Mormon missionary, that I would fulfill that little prompting I had. There had never been a Mormon movie of any kind made at that juncture. I had no idea that Richard Dutcher on the other side of the world was thinking about making a movie called God's Army. Didn't have a clue. Just for me, the idea was entirely revolutionary. And I started looking for properties. I actually wrote a script about my mission in Argentina, showed it to some people. Nobody was on fire about it. They were okay with it. But then a couple of people recommended I read Elder Groberg's book, which was called In the Eye of the Storm, mm-hmm. about his mission in Tonga. And I poo-pooed them. I remember thinking, you know, how could you ever make a dramatic movie out of a general authority's book? I was just sure. Right. Finally, one of the people just went into his library, pulled his copy of the
book.
Said,
here, I'll read this to you. Listen.
He gave it. He said, just shut up and read this book. He gave me his copy, and I started to read it that night. And I was only 15, 20 pages into it, and I knew this was it.
Mm. Spiritual confirmation, you knew this was it?
It was definitely spiritual, and it was also just awe of and love for Elder Groberg. The spirit of Elder Groberg comes off those pages, and it's such a pure, beautiful spirit. The spirit of Elder Groberg, the spirit of Polynesia, and the spirit of the Lord, all three of those things just hit me, and I just like, I have to do this. Mm. So I actually, I ran to Bookcraft at the time. Was the publisher and asked him for the movie rights, and they it took 6 months or so to get the movie rights, to get that whole deal done. Before I even had the movie rights, I had written the script and started to raise money to make the movie, because I just knew that was the movie to make.
And you know, it's funny because you were talking about Academy Award winning actress Anne Hathaway, and I forget about that. I forget the fact that she's in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't forget about it. I remind people every chance I get. No, Annie was only 18 when she came on the set of our movie, and she was playing the role of a 20-year-old girl and woman, and pulled it off seamlessly, flawlessly. She was not yet a star. We actually gave her her first feature film role. On the way to our movie set, she auditioned for The Princess Diaries. She had a layover in Los Angeles. And when she got to New Zealand, I asked her, I said, hey, you have anything else going on? She got this little grin and she said, you know, I had this really good audition on my way over here, but I'm superstitious, so I'm not going to talk about it unless I get it. And so I said, okay, that's fair enough. And then about 2 days later, she came bouncing onto the set. Mr. Davis, Mr. Davis. And she wouldn't call me Mr. anymore, I don't think. I got the part, I got the part. I said, so, oh, great, well, tell me about it. She said, oh, it's this little Disney movie. That was my first clue. And she said, with Julie Andrews and Hector Elizondo.
Jesus.
And Gary Marshall is directing it. And I was like, well, okay. And it's called The Princess Diaries. So she actually got that movie on the way to our movie. We shot our movie first, but we released our movie second because we knew that her profile would be raised by Princess Diaries, and that would help our movie commercially.
So a conscious choice. Hey, let's sit on it for a little bit.
Yeah, we sat on it. And it was, boy, it's hard. It's hard to sit on a completed movie. But
it's hard to sit on anything that's really good and like a surprise for me. Do you find yourself doing that? I mean, aside from movies, too?
You mean like when I'm pulling a prank on someone?
Well, yeah, like I'm pulling a prank, or like I'll have this episode. Like, we'll record this, right? And I'm not going to publish this today.
Yeah.
But I just want to get on and be like, hey, so I talked to Mitch Davis, and there's this really cool movie coming out, and we talk about this, and I can't tell you any more about it, but there's this thing. I'm miserable at surprises and secrets.
I'm pretty transparent that way, too. My wife can tell when I got something that I want to say that I'm not going to say.
You know?
And she invariably gets it out of me.
Yeah, because all it takes is, what can't you tell me? Well, promise you we won't tell anybody, and then blah.
Yeah.
Word vomit.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was tremendously successful. Not only good, The Other Side of Heaven, but tremendously successful.
You know, it depends on how you define success, I guess. We set out, when I say we, I made that movie with the able assistance of two great film producers, Jerry Mullen, Steven Spielberg's producer, and John Garbett. And the three of us were committed to making a movie that would not be just for Mormons. It would be about a Mormon, and it would have Mormon themes and values, but it would be a movie that would hold up on its own and stand on its own two feet in the commercial marketplace. And we were so blessed and so fortunate that the movie did do that. It was released, on DVD and in digital formats by Walt Disney Home Entertainment. And they didn't just put their Buena Vista Home Entertainment brand on it. They put Walt Disney Presents.
Mm-hmm.
They never do that. And they never release anything that's religiously themed. The only religiously themed product, to my knowledge, that Disney has ever released is The Other Side of Heaven.
Hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a dream. That was a dream come true for us as filmmakers. You want the critics to love your film. In our case, the critics between the left and right coast loved the movie. I mean, I remember the AP and at the time UPI writers were just gushing about the movie. Then the New York LA crowd weighs in, and all of a sudden you're making a sappy movie that they're not very kind to. But when you make a movie, you create a living thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues to live to this day. The movie's still being distributed internationally. We always know when it goes to a new country because we start getting emails and letters from missionaries about experiences they've had with people who saw the movie and said, "Hey, come in here." It was quite successful on many levels, and it was really a blessing to be a part of it.
So now let's get into Christmas Eve a little bit more.
Yeah.
I know you've told me that it's six different stories within a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So tease me a little bit more.
It's Christmas Eve in New York City, and it's the busiest night of the year, the most stressful night of the year. Everybody wants to go home. That's all they want to do is get home. And at precisely that moment, there's a car accident that causes a power outage that traps six different groups of people inside elevators overnight. They're not just there for 10 minutes. They're there overnight. And these are people that are in all sorts of it's a real interesting pageant of humanity. It's not just they're not all the same. You have a swarthy kind of playboy fashion photographer who gets stuck in an elevator with a really introverted legal secretary, and they get stuck in this elevator overnight, and he's immediately enamored, and she wants nothing to do with them. So that's, we call it the apartment elevator. It's kind of a romantic situation that unfolds there. We've got the orchestra elevator, where you got a bunch of orchestra members who are running up to the stage elevator. They're in the stage elevator, headed to a Christmas concert with their instruments, and they get trapped overnight. Very claustrophobic kind of situation with all their instruments, and they end up making music together. Got a hospital elevator. That's the elevator that Sean King and Gary Cole are in. And that's quite a touching situation. Gary Cole plays an acerbic atheist heart surgeon who has just closed up a woman and declared her terminal. And Sean King plays the nurse who is wheeling that very patient to a recovery room. So they're in the elevator with a woman who is terminal and doesn't know it and is still under anesthesia, and a heartless, no pun intended, heart surgeon, and a kind of warm-hearted, spiritually minded Sean King. And they get to have some pretty cool conversations about God, man, and the universe. And before the night is over, a really sort of beautiful spiritual thing happens inside that elevator.
Cool. Now, don't give away too much. If I'm asking you to give away too much.
You know, I'm telling you, I'm almost done with the whole movie.
At the very end.
So those are a couple of the elevators. Patrick Stewart plays a guy who's kind of like a Donald Trump real estate tycoon, kind of a ruthless, heartless guy who gets stuck in a construction elevator strapped to the side of his building overnight. And he's afraid of heights, and he's exposed to the elements and goes through kind of a really goes through his own transformation out there. So that's an idea. Construction elevator, orchestra elevator, ad agency elevator, hospital.
I'm missing John Heater. I'm missing Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, John Heater. Oh my gosh. He's hysterical. And that's the way the movie begins, actually. John Heater plays a lovable nebbish in tech support at a company who's crass HR manager fires him, and then he and the guy who just fired him end up stuck in the same elevator overnight. And the guy who fires him is played by Max Casella of he was an Inside Llewyn Davis and Blue Jasmine, Doogie Howser.
Okay.
And these two guys play off each other. It's just about everyone's favorite elevator.
Oh my gosh. The story setup, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm just excited to see it and see how all those kind of play out. Nervous about it? Are there nerves going into this, or have you done it enough times that you're just like, no, this is great, just let people have it?
No, you never get to not be nervous when you're making a movie, because you make a small movie, you may have small expectations, but they can still be whacked. And you make a big movie, and you have big expectations, and they can still be whacked. I guarantee you that. I don't know if J.J. Abrams, the director of Star Wars, is nervous right now. Probably not at all. He's probably just counting his money.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely nervous. You want a lot of people to see your movie, and you want them to love your movie, and you want your movie to live. You know, you want your movie to have a life. And when you don't have $100 million to spend to promote your movie, you got to rely on word of mouth. You got to rely on social media. I'm totally nervous. Everybody listening to this podcast needs to see the movie with 500 friends five times.
Yeah.
And they need to tweet about it and Facebook about it. And, I mean, you can't possibly get enough promotion for a movie unless you got a studio behind you with $100 million.
Yeah. In the case of Star Wars, you've already made money on pre-sales 4 months before the movie comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Christina Chong, who's in our movie, she actually plays the terminal woman lying on the hospital gurney. Is the opening. She's an actress in Star Wars. She got the word on our set that she got the part in Star Wars.
Wow.
She opens the movie. At least the very first scene in the script is a 6-minute action scene featuring her and her alone.
Cool.
So we'll see if the editing room was kind to her. But yeah, Christina Chong, if you look her up on IMDb, she's in Star Wars and Christmas Eve.
Is there a Mormon element of Christmas Eve?
You know, there certainly are a lot of there are a lot of Mormon elements in the movie. There's not a Mormon element to the script or to the to what happens inside these elevators, but Sean King is in the movie. John Heder's in the movie. Tyler McKellar and I are both LDS. We wrote and I directed the movie. The composer is one of my sons, Christian Davis, a film composer out of Los Angeles who's LDS. The two editors, Steve Ramirez and Danny Ramirez, are LDS. Two assistant editors are. So there are a lot of LDS people made the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenny Oakes Baker, of course, is LDS. So there are a lot of Mormon elements in the film. But and there are a few moments in the film when I think LDS people will feel especially fond of the material, when they'll go, yeah, way to go, you did it.
She's in the elevator and she's like, you're stuck. I'd like to take a minute and bear my testimony. And we're like, code! We got the code word.
What do you know about the Mormon Church?
Would you like to know more?
No. Sean King in particular gets to, in the hospital elevator, gets to have some really beautiful scenes with Gary Cole, just talking about things that matter.
And, that's great.
And Sean just delivered. She just delivered, and she loved. Larry's really, really proud of her and proud of the movie.
Yeah, how could you not be? Seems like just such an awesome story and project and great group of people. You really are lucky. And a lot of hard work. I don't want to. I say lucky, and I think I feel like sometimes that that comes across as, yeah, what are you doing? That's pure luck. But I mean, just what an amazing ensemble. A blessed, I guess, is a better word for it.
Yeah, no, we are lucky and we are blessed. And, you know, we had a great casting director, Jory Weitz, who was actually involved in Napoleon Dynamite.
Mm.
And he was just relentless. I called him the Energizer Bunny because he would make offers to anyone and everyone nonstop. And, you know, you get your nose bloodied a lot. You get a lot of people who say no before somebody says yes. In fact, Patrick Stewart didn't say yes to his part in our movie until we were halfway through shooting the movie.
Hmm.
We filmed.
That seems peculiar. That seems like that would not be the way that normally goes.
You would not ever normally do something like that. We had everybody else cast. But we each elevator shot separately, so we had the luxury of putting his elevator at the very back of the schedule to give us more time to not settle for a lesser actor or a lesser name. And so we waited and waited and waited, and 2 weeks into shooting, I got a cell phone call. I was in the commissary eating a Nutella crepe with my wife and son, and it was Patrick Stewart. And he said, well, Mitch, I'm on board. And I'll just never forget that phone call. But yeah, it's a scary thing making a movie without all your actors.
Yeah.
That was a big risk, but it paid off.
Absolutely. The movie comes out December 4th. In a selected nationwide release. People can get more information about the movie at thechristmaseve.com. And like you pointed out, and especially as people who listen to the Cultural Hall, you know that the opening weekend is the big time you got to go. That's when films are decided whether or not they're able to be kept on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah, we got 2 weeks before Star Wars opens.
Yeah.
And when Star Wars opens, Star Wars is the great Death Star of movies this year. It's going to be really hard to compete. But we're really hopeful that people will show up in droves and that they'll make the opening weekend matter.
Mitch, there's three questions that we ask everyone who steps here into the Cultural Hall, and I'll ask those of you right now. The first question is, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
You know, I have a latent call. I'm the stake missionary preparation specialist. We have a stake missionary program where we prepare young men to serve missions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my current calling. They pushed the pause button on it for a while. We were wearing out the wards, so they asked us to take a few months off. So that's my most recent calling.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I would be perpetually young and a perpetual young men's president. I've been a young men's president a number of times, and that's where the rubber meets the road, you know? That's where stuff that matters happens, around a campfire in the Uintas or whatever. I love that. But I guess I'm starting to look more like their grandfather than their father or uncle, so I'm not sure that ship's going to come back in.
They may have timed out. I don't think so.
We'll see.
Then the final question that we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
I love that my faith grows, and as I grow and gets more complex, as I get more complex, and gets stronger as it is tested. I think that faith, you know, it's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Planting a seed is an act of faith. Making a movie is an act of faith. Believing in a prophet who was an imperfect human is an act of faith. And the longer I live my life, the more complicated and yet fervent my faith becomes. As a family, this last Christmas, we asked each of our children to write the miracles, write us a letter with the miracles that have happened in their personal lives contained therein. And we put together a binder. It's kind of our family's faith book.
Cool.
And we shipped it to everyone. And it was just such a beautiful thing to be reminded of the many miracles, some of them really tiny and seemingly insignificant, some of them huge, you know. I mean, I got hit by lightning 20 years ago, almost killed, and that's a pretty dramatic thing to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
But small things and big things, but just looking at that volume and leafing through the pages and just kind of being reminded of the foundation of faith upon which our family is built was just a beautiful thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being here. Looking forward to the film again. It's called Christmas Eve. It comes out on the 4th of December. You got 2 weeks before Star Wars takes over the world. So get there in those 2 weeks. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen to this episode this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.